Okay then, let's get going. Well, welcome everyone. Welcome to Tomcat.com, and we're going to kick off this conference on track on Apache Tomcat with a State of the Cat. So it's a bit like the Apache State of the Feather, but obviously we're going to be focusing on Tomcat. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Mark Thomas. You'll see me posting on various Tomcat lists as Mark T at Apache.org. I've got various roles around the ASF, but the ones that really matter today is that I'm a committer and a PMC member on the Apache Tomcat project, and have been for, well, to be honest, longer than I can actually remember. So, welcome. Thank you for taking time to come and see us today. We do appreciate it. Really, this is aimed as a retrospective, this session. I'm going to look at what's happened in Tomcat over the last year or so, what are the notable events, what's been good, a little bit of what hasn't been quite so good, where could we maybe do a bit better. In terms of looking forward, I'm going to save that for the final session, which is the wrap-up at the end of the conference. So start with community. Community is vitally important to the project. If we don't have a community, we don't have a project. One of the things that you'll often hear people saying around the ASF is a good community can fix awful code. If the community is awful, it doesn't matter how good the code is, it's going to be a disaster. So if we get the community right, then everything else follows. And I'm pleased to say that in the last year or so, we've been able to welcome four new committers. That's Michael, Emmanuel, Cody and Huxing. Brings us to a total of around 20, and in terms of how many of those are active, it's about 6. But bear in mind, all the PMC members who are also active, they're also committers too. So it's not just 6 people working on Tomcat, it's more like 16 actively working on it, but just committers, that's 6. I planned to be able to announce some new PMC members. Unfortunately, I dragged my feet getting the paperwork sorted out, so we're not quite at the point where I can make it official. We should have that sorted by the end of the conference, so hopefully I'll have some good news on that front when we get to the wrap-up session at the end. At the moment, though, we've got about 22 PMC members, and around 10 of them are active. So in terms of sizes of community at Apache, that's actually pretty good. We have people like me who work on it full time. We have other people who dip in as and when they can. But what you will see is sort of a steady stream of contributions from a fairly wide range of people. If we look back, I think it was end of... Now this actually dates back to, was it not April? Probably September 2015. We started looking at actually getting a formal trademark registration for Tomcat. Now, just the word Tomcat. We haven't trademarked the logo, at least we haven't registered it. It's still a trademark, it's just not a registered trademark. But Tomcat itself is now a registered trademark. And the reason we did that is really to, again, it's helped to protect the community. Potentially the biggest problem to the Tomcat community is some organisation out there trying to either release a product that they call Tomcat to try and build on our goodwill, but actually it's their product, and then it confuses users as to, well, what's Tomcat from Apache and what's this other Tomcat thing from Foo Company over there? It is generally software products doing that. But what registering does, it gives us a couple of advantages. First of all, when companies are creating their products and the marketing has come up with a great name, pretty much the first thing that happens is legal says, oh, that's very interesting, we'll go and do a trademark search to make sure we're not going to make anybody upset. If now that we've registered Tomcat, legal is going to find Tomcat is registered, and they will automatically just steer away from it. And so it reduces the chance of people having... or choosing product names that infringe on our trademark, which then creates a huge amount of hassle for us to go and sort the mess out. So we don't have to explain, actually, no, you can't call your product that because it will confuse the end users. And it is doable. We've done it. It just takes effort. And frankly, I'd rather be writing code than talking about trademarks. So by registering it, it avoids some of that hassle because people, when they do their trademark searches, they find it. So that's one reason we did it. The other reason we did it is that some of the trademark infringements we need to deal with are with companies like Google, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, big companies. And whilst if our trademark isn't registered, we still have the legal right to protect it, it's a lot more work. And one of the things a lot of these companies do is their standard process for dealing with trademarks says, what's your trademark registration number? And if we can point them to a registered trademark, we get to go the very quick route of it. Yep, fine, that's registered, that's infringing, we'll take it down, thank you very much. And whatever the problem is, it goes away really quickly. If it's not registered, again, it's a lot more work and us having to say, no, really, we really have got the mark, but we do. And it takes more community effort to protect the mark. So by registering them, it saves us that effort. And we've registered them in the four areas where we see the greatest amount of Tomcat activity at the minute. So that's the US, Europe, India, and China. And at the minute, the registration process is complete in the US and ongoing in the other three areas. But the fact that we've even applied for it starts to get us some of those benefits because it starts to appear in things like the trademark searches. So that's why we did that. Really, it helps the community. It ensures that people, when people think of Tomcat, they're thinking of the product that we're all thinking of. And it saves the community effort in actually policing that mark and protecting that mark and lets us concentrate on more interesting things, like doing releases. And we've done quite a few of them in the last year. So each one of these little pictures is a Tomcat release. So let's start with Tomcat 9 and 8.5. Really, these are versions that I'm the release manager for. And what I've said is I will try and do one every month. And what I normally do at the start of the month is I'll start the release process, I'll fix the open bugs, and if I'm lucky, by about the middle of the month, I'll actually have the release out. Sometimes I go on holiday. Sometimes we have some regressions, and fixing the open bugs takes a little while to sort out. And we do a release, and then the other regressions turn up, and we have to do another release shortly afterwards. But roughly, 8, 5, and 9 have had a release about every month. And that's a cadence we've stuck to for a while now, and it's one that I'm fairly confident that we'll be able to stick to. 8.0, that's released a little bit less often. We're trying to wind that down. More on that later. 7 is around every couple of months. With Violetta doing the releases, it's a little bit faster than that, but normally it's every couple of months. And 6 we have now reached end of life for. So the plan for end of life for 6 was here, end of December. What actually happened was we knew about the vulnerabilities here that we needed to get fixed. We didn't actually get them fixed and released until then, so that's why we did the Tomcat 6 release. We could have said actually made that one the last release, but because we knew about the vulnerabilities, we thought, no, we will actually do the release and get it out. We got it out in March, and the reason there was another one in April was we found another security issue that was related to the ones we've already fixed, so it seems silly not to fix it. It was only one more release, so we got that final release out. But as far as I am aware, that April release is the last release of Tomcat 6. I'm fairly sure that's the case. Now, the way Apache works is that if 3PMC members want to do a Tomcat 6 release, then they're more than welcome to do so. Personally, I don't. And I don't see any of my fellow PMC members wanting to do that either, so it's probably unlikely, but it might happen. So, yes, Tomcat 6, yes, rest in peace. You have served us very well for over a decade. We've had stable releases of Tomcat 6. It's been there for a really long time. When I joined the project, Tomcat 6 wasn't even being worked on. So it has been a part of my life for quite some time. But what really I wanted to highlight here is just the dates here. Just the distance between the first release and the last release. The Tomcat community, I think, does a really good job of providing support for a major version for a very long period of time. So Tomcat 6 was just over a decade. Tomcat 5.5, from memory, was just under. But what that does mean is you work with a Tomcat release, you pick that Tomcat release, and you have it is going to be around and supported for a very long time, certainly in terms of software. And that's because we try and support three versions in parallel. So at the moment we're supporting 9, 8 and 7. We ended up supporting 4 in parallel and we're just waiting for 6 to end of life. But at the minute it's 9, 8 and 7. So 7 is going to be supported, I'll say for the foreseeable future, certainly until we start seriously thinking about Tomcat 10 and actually have Tomcat 10 releases and milestones starting to think, until we get to that point, I don't think we're going to think about an end of life date for Tomcat 7. So again, long support life cycles. I think we do a pretty good job of that. Also last year, we created Tomcat 8.5. That was the choice of 8.5 was sort of a nod back to when we released Tomcat 5.5. So it wasn't really an incremental improvement on 8.0, 8.5 was much more of a radical change. And we didn't start it from 8, we actually started it from 9. So we took the 9.4 milestone, took a copy of it, and then basically went through and removed all of the features, or at least rewrote all of the features that required Java 9, because Tomcat 8 has to be Java E 7, which means it has to run on Java 7. So we had a few changes, but the reason we wanted to do it, there were lots of really cool things in Tomcat 9, particularly HTTP 2, that we wanted people to have access to in a stable Tomcat release. Problem is that we couldn't do a stable Tomcat, or we still can't do a stable Tomcat 9 release, because the specs aren't final, and the specs were dragging out longer and longer and longer, and we really couldn't see a realistic date when we knew that those specs were going to go final. So now what we'll do is we'll create 8.5 so we can get these features into people's hands in a stable release so they can start using them. So Tomcat 8.5 implements the same specifications as 8.0. If you want to access any of the new things, then you have to access them through a Tomcat specific API, because they're obviously not part of the server API in that version. And we've always intended to end of life 8.0 as soon as it's practical. Now, originally that was sometime last year, but that plan didn't work out. And what we're really looking for here is for 8.5 to be, give or take a few configuration changes, a drop-in replacement for 8.0. And until recently it wasn't. I think now it probably is. If any of you who are currently on 8, and have looked at Tomcat 8.5 and said, oh, we can't move to Tomcat 8.5 because, please let us know what that because is, because we want to go look at it and fix it, because we do want people moving from 8.0 to 8.5. To us, it's purely selfish. It's easier for us to maintain 9.8.5 and 7 than it is for us to maintain 9.8.5, 8.0 and 7. So we'd like to close 8.8 off if we can, but equally, we don't want to leave anybody in the lurch. If there's something that's stopping you moving from 8.0 to 8.5, let us know what it is and we'll take a look at it. So I talked a little bit about Tomcat 9 and us not knowing what was happening and when the specs are going to be final. If you look at the traffic on the Servlet 4 expert group, which is the specification that Tomcat 9 is implementing, an interesting pattern emerges. So it starts off back in 2014. Initial activity where we all get set up, then work starts in earnest, then Oracle goes quiet. It's a feature of the way that the Servlet expert group is set up, is the only people that can commit changes are the two Oracle employees on the expert group. The other experts, me included, Greg from Jetty, Martin from IBM, Stuart, the other expert group members can't commit any changes. All we can do is discuss and offer opinions. The people who make the decisions, the people that actually make the changes, it's all Oracle. So if Oracle disappear, nothing happens. So, March 2015, Oracle disappear. Now, anyone would think, looking at this, there's a big Java conference in September every year that they wanted to show some progress for, and lo and behold, big spike of activity the month before. And then, guess what, and then it dies off again. Little discussion, little discussion. Oh, look,
It's September. It's time for Java 1. Big spike of activity. And it did die off again. But since late December, early January, it has actually, the server expert group has got a lot better. And yes, I will knock Oracle for disappearing and the way they run the expert group from time to time. But to be fair to them, the last 5 months have actually been run pretty well. It's been active, they've been following up on things, they've been listening to the other expert group members, which is something that hasn't always happened in the past, and compromises are happening. It used to be unusual for an idea that was proposed by Oracle not to end up in the spec pretty much identically as they proposed it, regardless of any feedback that they might have received. In the last 4 months, what we've actually seen is a lot more discussion, a lot more back and forth, a lot more compromising, really more working how all of us expect an Apache project to work. And what's happened has been really good, and we are pretty close to getting the servlet full spec finalized. So things have definitely got better in the last 4 months. It's just a shame that we've had these big gaps. Things certainly could have happened a lot earlier. But really, that is why we have Tomcat 8.5. Chris, question.
Can non-EG members join the mailing list?
Yes, you could. For reasons I'll explain, you can't at the moment. There are two mailing lists. There's the expert group mailing list, which only expert group members can join, but that is copied to the public or the user's mailing list, which anybody can join and anybody can contribute to. Now, because anything... Now, is it anything that goes to the users gets copied to expert or vice versa? But there's a copy in one direction or the other. I can't remember which way round it is. But the upshot is that we'd probably be better off with just one mailing list anyway. But we've got two. All of the expert group work is actually done on java.net, which is being closed down. So the spec is now moved to GitHub. And the mailing lists have moved to, I think, is it lists.io? Not sure. But it's on the old JavaNet mailing list where they've moved to. And because of the timescales, because we're sort of like 2 weeks out from finishing the spec, hopefully, then they've just created the expert group one and not the users one. But if that's a real problem, there are ways around that. Or the other thing you can do is just create issues against it in GitHub and put the comments in that way.
Okay. I had something in their Jira tracker that's at this point like 3 years old, and it's a really simple one-liner.
Yeah, you're not the only one.
So I was hoping I could run in now and just say like, hey, can you do this please?
Feel free, it should be in GitHub.
Okay.
So feel free to ping it. When we did the review of the public draft, one of the things I pointed out was there was a whole bunch of stuff in the issue tracker like that we really should get in there. And most of it was either simple new features or clarifications, just to make it clear to people how the spec expects the service to behave. So servlet 4 is imminent, hopefully. The big ticket item really is HTTP2 support. Now, in terms of what that actually means for the application developer, potentially not a whole lot. Tomcat will do most of the work for you. You just turn on HTTP2, access your app over it, and you get most of the benefits to start with. The bit that does matter is if you want to take advantage of server push. So the classic example is browser requests to the home page, so the server pushes back to the browser at the home page, and the style sheets and the images and everything else that's needed to form that page, because the server knows that that's what the browser is going to request next. So if you want to use server push, then obviously you have to use the new API to push stuff out to the server. But there's still quite a lot of benefit you can get just from switching to HTTP2. Finally, we have moved to UTF-8 by default for URIs. Now, only for URIs. Request bodies, response bodies, by default, are still ISO 8859-1 unless you say otherwise. The good news is, though, you don't need to have the character encoding filter anymore. You can wave goodbye to that. There are new configuration attributes in web.xml that will let you set the default encoding for response and default encoding for the body. So switching to UTF-8 is now a lot easier. It's those two lines in web.xml, job done. Because URIs are in UTF-8 by default anyway. There are some other simplifications in the API. We've added HTTP filter, which is effectively, it's the equivalent of HTTP servlet, and just takes out a little bit of the boilerplate code. All of the listeners have now got default no-op methods. I don't know about you, but pretty much every time I write a servlet context listener, either initialized or destroyed is a no-op, because I'm only interested in one of them. Well, now you don't have to bother writing that no-op, because they've all got default no-op methods. So it just enables you to delete a little bit more of that boilerplate code, let you focus on what really matters. Servlet mapping is something that's probably of greatest interest to framework developers. I know GSF are really very, very keen on this. What it lets you do is, for any particular request, find out, why is this servlet processing this request? I know what the URI is. Why is this servlet processing it? So it'll tell you whether it was matched based on extension, based on path, whether it's an exact match, whether it's a default servlet, and so on. So it's mainly interest of framework developers that then need to do particular things in different cases, but it might be useful in your application, and it's there if you want to. And there's a few gaps in the programmatic API. They're mainly just oversights. Things like you couldn't programmatically set the default session timeout via the servlet context, via the programmatic API. Now you can. So really what we've done there is go through anything you can configure in web.xml, you should be able to configure programmatically. And now you can. There are just a few gaps that needed filling in. So that's new stuff in Servlet 4. What about new stuff that's in Tomcat? A lot of this all comes around TLS. I will try and use TLS this week. I will probably slip up and use SSL at some point. I will try and say TLS though. So HTTP2 pretty much requires TLS. You can run it without, but that's not really what you're meant to be doing. The intention is it runs over TLS. Whoops, I've gone too far. So there's a bunch of things that we needed to do to get TLS working with HTTP2, and we got a few sort of extra things as add-on bonuses, as it were. First of all, we now support server name indication. This lets you do TLS virtual hosting. So the example I always use is the Apache websites. We've got a bunch of sites. Tomcat.apache.org, Hadoop.apache.org, HTTPD.apache.org, etc., 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 etc. Now, that's all well and good, because we can actually serve all of those with a single certificate, star.apache.org. It just works, doesn't matter which site you request, star.apache.org is a good match. That's great, until you come to things like, hang on a minute, what about openoffice.org? Doesn't work. Offbiz.org doesn't work. And there's a whole bunch of other sites. So the way that you, to have all of those handled by one server, you need to use SNI. And the reason for that is the way the TLS handshake works, and more on this later, browser connects to the server sends back the certificate, and if that certificate doesn't match the server name that the browser's trying to connect to, you get the big red error bars, exclamation marks, browsers throwing hissy fits, and generally not letting you do what you want to do. Whatever certificate comes back has to match the site that the browser's asked for. And when you've got a range of sites like Apache.org on one side and OpenOffice.org on another, you need a way of working out, well, I need a certificate for each because I can't get one certificate that covers them all. How do I get the right certificate? And SNI is what lets you do that. Essentially, it's some extra information the browser puts in the handshake to say, right, this is the site I'm trying to connect to. So the site sends back the right certificate, the browser bar is all nice and green, everybody's happy, and it carries on. And you can now do this in Tomcat as well. Up until 8.5 you couldn't, but now you can. And you can do that with any of the connectors, not just the APR native one, you can do it with Java connectors too. Now the next one is something that I think is really neat. Quite a while ago, somebody made a proposal that went something along the lines of, well, the JSSE implementation is pluggable. It's designed to be pluggable. You can buy commercial JSSE implementations from a few companies and plug them into your JRE and use them instead of the built-in one. Well, we all know that, or most people are aware that some of the JSSE implementations around TLS, the performance isn't great. Some people might say that's generous. But OpenSSL is actually pretty good performance-wise. So wouldn't it be really good if we could create a JSSE provider that was built around OpenSSL? And that was tried, and it was painful. Really, really difficult. And essentially the project died off. It didn't progress well enough. However, fortunately, a few years ago, was it the Netty folks that had this? Yeah, had a really bright idea. And they looked at the API that JSSE is actually using. And what they realized was you actually don't need a full JSSE provider. If you can just implement a couple of classes and then pass those in to the JRE, that's actually all you need. And those couple of classes can wrap OpenSSL, and actually that's really easy. So what they were able to do, and with their blessing, we said thank you very much and stolen it. Well, they stole some of our API native code to do it in the first place, improved it, and then we stole it back. All in the best spirit of cooperative open source. We did ask. So, and they were very happy for us to do it. So what we've now got is when you're using a Java-based TLS connector, you can use a Java-based JSSE implementation if you like, or you can add the API native library, and then you can use OpenSSL just to do the encryption bit. And this is actually really, performance-wise it's great, and the one benefit this has over using the full API native connector is it's generally a little bit more stable, because the API native connector is rather fussy about little things like freeing native memory and not doing it too many times, or forgetting to do it. And we're a lot better at using it correctly than we have been in the past, but I think there are still a few bugs in there somewhere. This is a smaller code surface. It's easier to get right, and it's generally more stable. So now you've got the ability to get the power of OpenSSL encryption with the Java connectors. Yes?
So do I understand this correctly that you're key material lives in some sort of a Java format, but you're doing the encryption and decryption merge in the native OpenSSL library?
You can actually have your key material in Java format or OpenSSL format. We'll happily convert the two on the fly. That's part of what we've done in Java 8.5. I'll talk about in a minute, but yes.
Okay, so in the case of like a hardware crypto device, though, how would that work, or would it not?
It would, however you normally configure OpenSSL to work with that hardware crypto device, you just configure it the same way and it would just work. Okay, other things, JASPIT, now let me get this right, the Java Authentication Service Provider Interface for Containers. Now, that's a Java EE standard that has been around for a while, hasn't been that much interest in it from the Tomcat point of view. The main reason we implemented it is it allows for pluggable authentication, and the one that people are probably most interested in is there's an OAuth. There are OAuth implementations out there. So if you need to plug Tomcat into OAuth, this is one of the easiest ways of doing it. If you look in the Tomcat docs, there's an example of plugging it into Google OAuth and step-by-step how to set it up, but generally the process is the same for any OAuth provider. Now you can implement any sort of authentication scheme you like, as long as you implement it to the JASPIT APIs. OAuth is probably the one that's of most interest though. And wildcard hosting, this was at the time the longest open bug on the Tomcat bug tracker. It'd been open for over a decade. And the reason it had been open for over a decade is that what it was asking for was when you're setting up a host, there's a hosts have a name element. So this is again when you're doing virtual hosting, the name element had to match the host that the user wanted. Now that was okay if you had one or two hosts. Where it got a bit annoying was if you sort of had 30 or 40 different names for the same host, which there are some companies out there that I've done consultancy with that do it. Their server XML is just a long list of alias names. Because you had to call out each one individually. Now, the original bug request or enhancement request was for some sort of regular expression matching. Now, the problem is that host matching is on the critical path for request processing. And it is optimized like you would not believe this, that particular code path. It is a very heavily optimized binary search that regular expression processing would have just killed. So this got sort of parked on the, yeah, we don't really know how to do that. We know it's a good idea, but it's going to add delay to every single request. Even if you're not using regular expressions, it's just going to slow everything down. We don't want to do it. And what we came up with was a halfway house. And the halfway house is you can have star dot style host names. You can't have anything else. You can't have regular expressions. You can't have the full host name or star dot. And that's enough for 95% of the use case. And we can still implement it fairly quickly. And we end up having to do two binary searches rather than one, which, given how optimized the code is, isn't too bad anyway. So we've now got that support in Tomcat 9.8.5 as well. Alongside of this, some good Oracle news. We've had various things fixed in the JRE. So back late 2015, Java deserialization became a security hot topic again when people rediscovered the issue for about the third time. And what was being reported was that lots of things out there were deserializing Java objects without validating what they were. And effectively, you were taking unverified, unfiltered user data and plugging it directly into the heart of your server. Unsurprisingly, there were some not very nice side effects of doing that. Now, initially, a lot of the vulnerability reports were targeted at the code that was being leveraged. So they were deserializing something, and then the something was using some other code to do something nasty. And a lot of the vulnerability reports were targeted at the thing that was being used, missing that, hang on a minute, no, you're deserializing untrusted code. That's the security problem. You've got no idea what it's... Oh, by the way... There are serialized objects you can construct that will basically kill the JVM in terms of either out of memory or CPU, trivially. You don't have to use the Commons Collections gadget or the file upload or anything else. You can just kill the JVM very easily just with standard classes. So while all this was going on, I thought, well, we're pretty sure we know we've done the right thing in Tomcat, but we better have a quick review of everything anyway, just to make sure. And we found a few edge cases around session serialization and deserialization. We also found this one, which had been reported to us about a year beforehand, and we had misanalyzed it, and we'd done the classic, we'd fixed the symptom, not the cause. So there was a deserialization issue that was targeting Commons File Upload, I think it was. So we went and fixed Commons File Upload, and we missed this bit, which was basically you could do remote code execution via JET. If the JET export was accessible, you could do the remote code execution because of the way authentication worked. Essentially, what it was expecting was two strings, one for the username, one for the password. But it would accept any objects and turn them back into objects before it said, oh, that's not a string. Oh, well, authentication failed. Yes, you haven't authenticated, but you've just executed the code I've passed in. So we worked with Oracle to get that fixed. That was a very positive experience. I've got a blog post up about that. We worked with Oracle to fix UTF-8. There were issues there, mainly around decoding of URIs. There are very strict rules in the UTF-8 spec about what happens if the sequence of bytes that you've been given aren't valid UTF-8. And they're all about what you reject and when. And if you don't follow those rules exactly, what can happen is you can inject characters into the decoded string. And some of the characters you can inject are things like periods or slashes or basically things that do nasty directory traversal attacks, or carriage returns and line feeds. that do header injection attacks. And essentially, it was all a bit yuck. But again, we worked with Oracle. They fixed everything we found, which has been great. Memory leaks. A few years ago, I'll tell you the full story over a beer later if you're interested, but we introduced this memory leak detection and prevention, and it was working around a lot of memory leaks in the JRE. Oracle have historically been fairly resistant to getting these fixed. Last year or so, no problem, every single one of them fixed. So Tomcat 9, all of the memory leaks we're aware of in the JRE will be fixed in the first Java 9 release, and they're fixed in the most recent Java 8 releases as well. And finally, while tracking down these leaks, we found another JRE bug. We actually tracked this one down with help from the folks at YourKit. So we got a memory leak report, and I could see the memory leak happening, but when I tried to chase it, I couldn't trace it, I couldn't find it. Class load was pinned in memory, could not clear it, but there was no path to trace that back to a GCU. Just could not figure out what was going on. So, well, must be the profiler's fault. I'll complain to YourKit. So dropped them an email. They were brilliant, as always. Responded within about half an hour. We had a back and forth of emails over the course of the day. And by the end of the day, they'd tracked down the root cause of the bug in the JVM code. That meant they couldn't trace through a particular link that they needed to be able to trace through. And that link had been taken out to fix some odd, obscure, platform-specific bug that no longer applied. So again, we got in touch with Oracle and they fixed it, and that's all been sorted. So a whole class of leaks that were incredibly difficult to track down, with help of YourKit and Oracle, are now a lot easier. So again, good sort of cooperative work we're doing in other parts of the community. Chuck a few graphs up, because it's a state of presentation, so we can't have a state of presentation without some pretty graphs. What we're looking at here are bug counts. So this is for Tomcat 6, this is 7. Green line is the new bugs, that's essentially the open bugs. Pink one at the bottom here is the reopened. There's other ones that are pretty much in the noise. So, yeah, at most there's been about 100 odd open bugs for Tomcat 6. Tomcat 7's gone up to about 60. Obviously, 6 is nosediving now to have been closed them all off. And if you look at 8 and 9, well, that's 18 up there, so 9 bugs, fairly low numbers. 8's up at what, about 50. They're really. And the shape and the detail of these graphs is a little bit interesting, but really the message I want to get across is that I think the Tomcat community is doing a really good job of keeping on top of the open bugs. These are bugs and enhancements, and most of them are enhancements. If you look at the figures, in the last year or so, we've fixed about 300 bugs. Now, that is individual bugs. So if some of those we will have fixed in 9, 8, 5, 8, 7, and 6. If we've done that, I've only counted them once. So we've fixed about 600 individual bugs. At any one time, there's between 10 and 20 open bugs across all versions. And there's actually genuine bugs, things that aren't working properly. And most of them are in there. The number's only that high because they're in the category of, yeah, we know something's not quite right here, but we haven't been able to find the bug. The user hasn't been able to find us a test case that demonstrates it reliably. But we'll leave it open because we really do think there's an issue here. We just haven't got to the bottom of it yet. Most of it was enhancement requests, about 130-150. And fun, something that I like to keep an eye on, maybe it's just me, but just lines of code. Tomcat 9 is about 125,000 lines of code, and that's been pretty stable, even with all of the new features we've added. If you go back and look at where Tomcat 9 was 2-3 years ago, it's about pretty much the same number, even though we've added HTTP2 support, JazzPick, the OpenSSL stuff. And the reason we've done it is because, as well as implementing new stuff, we do go through and curate the code. So we've done refactoring to reduce duplication, we get rid of old stuff, clean things out. But I'm actually, that's not, considering how much functionality we've got, I don't think that's a bad number of lines of code. It hasn't all been plain sailing. We've had a few hiccups. request line validation. So we had some security vulnerabilities which were around odd characters in the request line, and Tomcat treated them as HTTP 0.9 requests when they were really invalid. And you could start to get things like request injection if Tomcat was behind a proxy. Because if the proxy and Tomcat handle the same thing differently, then you start to have all sorts of undesirable behavior. So I thought, well, there's a simple solution to this. There's a spec. In fact, there are several specs as to what's going to be in the request line. We will just go through, and as a starting point, we will not allow any characters in the request line that aren't meant to be there as per the spec. So we implemented that, and then people started screaming at us. And the reason they started screaming at us is some of the characters that aren't allowed, in particular, are curly brackets and pipe. Now, there's this syntax called JSON or something that tends to use those characters quite a lot, and people were putting that directly in the query string. And all of a sudden, Tomcat was going, no, 400, bye. And that caused some problems. Now, fundamentally, that's the client's fault. The client should not be sending those characters. They should be encoded. The specs say they should be encoded. The specs haven't changed for years. The clients need to be fixed. However, the servers have been lenient as well. Now, that is going to change for the reasons that we, Tomcat, tightened up this request line processing. You know, other servers are going to be doing the same. HTTPD has gradually tightened up the request line processing as well. So what we've said is in Tomcat 9, no, we're not going to bend on this. We are actually going to say, look, the spec's the spec, you need to follow it. What we've done for 8.5, say, yeah, okay, fair enough. We'll give you a get out of jail free card on this one. And what we've done is for some of the characters, and so far it is just curly braces and pipes, there's a configuration option that you can basically allow them back into the request URI, and Tomcat will say, yep, yeah, okay. But we're looking at those characters basically on a case-by-case basis, and those are okay because we can't see any way that they can be exploited. Other things that people have asked for have been, no, that's just sillily dangerous and we're not going to allow it. But that stuff is there. Next one, HTTP reason phrase. Yeah, this is all down to me, definitely. Looking at the... well, it started... I did the HTTP2 implementation. You don't have a reason phrase in HTTP2, so it's totally superfluous. And then the new HTTP 1.1 specs came out, and reading through that, it basically said, well, yeah, the reason phrase is there, but clients should ignore it. I said, well, actually, so HTTP2 doesn't need it. The HTTP 1 specs say the client should ignore it. If I look at the HTTP 1 specs historically, a zero length reason phrase is valid. There's a chunk of ugly code in Tomcat around making sure reason phrases are safe and people don't put silly characters in them, much for the same reasons we're processing the request line. But hey, I can just get rid of like 20 lines of code and hassle and it'll all just, yeah, we don't need it, we'll just get rid of it. So we did that in Tomcat 9 and nobody really noticed. Then we created Tomcat 8.5. And people started using it, and then they did notice. And the problem there is, again, it's clients are out there, and they're expecting there to be a reason phrase. And they're expecting there to be a specific reason phrase, and they are failing if they don't see the reason phrase they expect. So what we've done in 8.5 is we've added back an option that says, yeah, okay, you can turn the reason phrase back on if you want to. It's disabled by default, but you can turn it back on. Tomcat 9, it's just not there at all. Next one was 6.2.6.5 cookie spec. Generally, this worked pretty well. There are a few implementation errors that we've ironed out. Biggest problem, though, is still Internet Explorer and assorted Microsoft browsers. There are a few things that the cookie spec says are not allowed that Explorer requires to work properly. The solution to that at the moment is to just use the legacy cookie processor, which is still there in 8.5, because it lets you do some of the things that Internet Explorer requires. on a similar vein as a potential hiccup in that we haven't implemented it yet. Well, we've implemented hostname validation, again, for much the same reason that we're looking at request line, but we haven't turned it on yet. And the way we're going to turn it on, having learned our lessons a little bit, is that we'll turn it on in a logging mode only. So the first couple of releases, it will just log noisily that I received this garbage. At some point in the future, I'm going to be rejecting it. You might want to fix your clients. Before we then actually start kicking the requests out so people get a chance to see what's going on. Security-wise, we've had a few own goals, generally around refactoring. So we've had some issues with Sendfile and Bytebuffer. I think those are all now fixed. New code around HTTP2. Most of the issues there were around implementing the various limits that we'd implemented for HTTP1. We needed to do the same for HTTP2. We didn't do that straight away. And then somebody ran an HTTP2 fuzzer against it and the whole thing fell over. And we discovered the hard way that we weren't doing error handling quite as cleanly as we needed to. So that got fixed. We'll talk about the Java serialization. And then there's been a handful of issues that I've sort of lumped together under Security Manager Bypass. These are generally issues that don't affect people. What it lets a malicious application do is bypass the protections of the security manager. And that's typically only a problem if you don't trust the applications that you're running, which isn't the case for most of our users, which is why these tend to get a fairly low priority. But we have had a handful of them. We fixed them as we found them.
Question.
So, yes?
About security, of course. Is there like a recommended set of trusted ciphers? That list tends to be like a moving target.
It does. What I would suggest, if you're at all worried about getting your TLS configuration right, set it up and point SSL Labs tester at it. It is an incredibly useful piece of code. You just give it a host name and it gives you a full diagnostic report of how it's set up, what's accepted, what isn't, which browsers it will work with, which clients it will work with, which ciphers you're accepting, and it details everything. The guy behind it knows TLS incredibly well. It's really good. And it's what I use on a sort of every 6 months or so. I take the default Tomcat install, create an instance, open a port through my router to point at it, and then I just run the test on it and see what we get. And we normally get, we've had A's the last couple of times I've done it. The first time I did it, we didn't do very well. And we needed to disable some old stuff. But these days, the default contact settings aren't bad, but it's always worth just running it through SSL Labs to make sure you're happy. Question over.
Well, I was going to ask the name of the laws, I missed it.
SSL Labs. SSLLabs.com.
I was also going to add that Mozilla releases on a regular basis, they consider the best spec.
They do. That can sometimes get a little bit. It used to be harder to work with because they'd use the standard names, and then of course JVM has its own names you had to translate, and then they're the ones that JVM didn't implement. But if you're using OpenSSL, you can just use them directly. Now that's one of the other advantages. So in terms of what's happening for the rest of TomcatCon today, pretty much the focus is security. Tomorrow we're looking at networking, performance, a little bit of reactive programming. Thursday is more looking at working with Tomcat, using Tomcat in different environments, cloud, how people have used it in their organisations, how they've built stuff on top of Tomcat, and then we'll finish with the wrap-up. Yes?
So I should ask this earlier, but you were talking about Tomcat 7, 8, and 8.5.
Yes.
We jumped from Tomcat 7 to Tomcat 8.5. Our initial release went out on 8.5.11 last month, and we're on 8.5.15. You said removing stuff from Tomcat 8.5 to make it a drop-in replacement for 8.0. Is that work all done, or is there certain areas that I should be concerned about?
I'm not aware of anything at the moment, but if you find something, let us know and we'll fix it. But as far as I'm aware, the last thing that was really a problem going from 8.0 to 8.5 was not being able to turn the reason phrase back on. And now we've backported that, I believe we've ticked all of those boxes.
Okay.
But as always, what I would ask the people here is that the most useful thing you can do for us is test the latest releases. By far the most useful feedback we get is when people take a release and use it. I'm not saying you need to put it into production straight away, but if you want to, that's fine. But run it up in your test environments, run it through your QA, find what we've broken and let us know. That sort of feedback is incredibly useful.
Our customers who provide us feedback on a reason for
Chris.
A couple notes. Number one, the SSL Labs thing, there is a command line client for it.
There is.
They publish it, so we might actually want to maybe put that into like a full release build kind of thing that could just validate the...
That sounds like a task that the committee could do, doesn't it, Chris? Well volunteered. Thank you.
The second thing is, could you back up to your hiccups page?
What did I forget?
This one. No, these things here are the things that are going to block people from a literal drop-in replacement from 8.0 to 8.5. The request line validation is tighter. The reason phrase, you will need to re-enable the reason phrase. It is not the default for 8.5. So if you want to do a true drop-in replacement, you're going to have to reconfigure the reason phrase. Yes, reconfigure the reason phrase, and you may have to change the cookie processor.
What we're aiming for is dropping with a few configuration changes.
Right. Like you said, we skipped it. I was worried about changes. You know, as long as the changes are like, okay, we allow this to be turned back on.
Yeah.
Those are great. I was worried about.
Yeah, you're nine. We're
like removing the Jasper compiler, and you know, 7-point release screwed us up because it was in our web.xml stuff, so we had to, or I don't know, wherever it was.
So. Yeah. Okay. Nine. We're a lot less flexible. 8.5 to 9, that's the sort of time scale that these things need to be sorted.
Last note I had was about releases and voting. Mark asked, anyone who wants to test is welcome to test. Anyone can vote, too. Your vote isn't binding, but it's nice to have them, particularly if they are minus one.
If you're
having a problem, raise your hand and say, this is not working.
What I will say is, if a user finds a regression in a release, then there's a pretty good chance we're going to stop that release. Even if I've got 6+1s from PMC members and one user saying, hang on, this doesn't work properly, I'll happily fix it and re-roll the release. Because if it doesn't work for you, it's not going to work for anybody else. So it matters not a bean that 6 PMC members, it works for us, we're okay. That's not really very helpful. So do let us know. That's incredibly, I think, Ross, you had a question.
Yeah, I was wondering, getting Tomcat 8.5 into Ubuntu package repos. From what I can tell, it's 8.0. Who does the work there? Is that the Ubuntu community, or is that the
community? That's actually Debian. It's done by Debian. Is Emmanuel in the room? Or is he hiding? One of the Tomcat committers, and he got roped into being a Tomcat committer because
for this reason
he does this work, but he does that porting. Now Ubuntu's got rules about what they do when they update stuff, like I think all the distros do. So
and if also breaks free IPA,
breaks what?
Free IPA. That's the reason why I haven't updated Fedora 8.5 yet. Debian did, and then Ruby, because we removed BIO, and Tomcat JSS requires it.
If BIO being missing is a problem, there is a fix we can apply that I applied at work that is basically a very simple class. It's a one-line fix. It's HTTP HTTP processor extends HTTP NIO processor, end of. So all that happens, if you specify BIO explicitly, you just get NIO anyway.
Yeah.
And it just works. If BIO being missing is a blocker for something, we can actually fix it very simply.
So I think they were using, Tomcat JSS is apparently, I just found this out recently because of the stuff. It's a wrapper for NSS versus OpenSSL for crypto.
Right.
But they were using it in the socket directly on some stuff.
Okay, at which point I'm running away very, very quickly. So you said using the socket directly. Is that right away?
Yeah, they
okay, that, that's a like bit more problematic.
So they needed to do some stuff about it, and then they just didn't.
And it might be worth them, if you want to point them towards what's been done with the OpenSSL wrapper around that could actually be quite useful for them. Okay, any more questions? Because I am out of time. Yes.
For 8.5, the plugin change at all from I always front everything on the website. So
the connectors,
The same.
No, that's still the same. They've been on a fairly low release cadence. I know we did a ModJK release late last year because we picked up a whole handful of fixes. So we got those out. The native connector went through a series of releases when we were getting all the ALPN stuff fixed. That's kind of died off again now. I mean, it's really at a state where it's actually pretty stable. But if somebody finds a problem, then... Yeah, that's fine, that'll just work. The protocol hasn't changed at all.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And although the blocking I.O. connector is gone from HTTP, I think it's still there. No, it's gone from AJP as well. Okay, so if you happen to be trying to use the blocking flavor, you'll be fine.
But to be honest, with AJP, NIO works better anyway, because you don't have request starvation issues. This presentation was either going to last about 20 minutes or massively overrun, so apologies that I've overrun slightly, but thank you for your attention and enjoy the rest of the conference.